Miau! Miau, 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 miau! 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 Wolf! Miau! This is the Freedom Fiends. I am Mr. Derek J, here to melt your medulla oblongata with molecular morsels of munchy mechanizations. Maybe my mouth must move more mobly, or maybe my mom made marmalade magpies. Either way, here to inoculate you from indoctrination, broadcasting live and worldwide from LRN.FM studios in Keene, New Hampshire, the Liberty Media capital of the world. Here to help me warm your synapses this early morning is Hugo Gonzalez from Old Mexico, the king of anarchism.
Hello. Hello there. And I can feel it. I can feel that all that inoculation is a present hundreds of miles away.
Hugo, are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I am safe, and I've not been contacted by either government, either the one claiming your territory or my own.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. You know, I was contacted by the government. Again, it seems that every week I am contacted for one reason or another, but this time it was another subpoena that I've been served to appear in court, so that was fun. I had the police come to my door and tell me that I must go to their courthouse this month later on.
So did you have a chance to inoculate them too?
No, I just was friendly with them and said thank you and, you know, have a nice night. So go on your way and please leave my porch now. Anyway,
yeah, that's the way to go.
Michael Dean, regular host, can't be with us tonight. He's sitting in the corner with gum on his nose, thinking about what he's done until he apologizes to the teacher. Hugo and I, instead, are going to take you on a journey to the land of Speedy Gonzales and churros, Mexico. We're also going to share, a very real moment with you, because the truth is that Hugo and I don't know each other. We have never met, and so we're going to have a very unique experience as you sit back and enjoy the sounds of one man meeting another over the radio. So, Hugo, how are you today?
Doing all right, and enjoying myself and a bit of freedom here in Mexico and preparing for work tomorrow, so I'm doing all right. Yeah, things are pretty much the same in all the Western Hemisphere. You know, you're in New Hampshire. I'm here in Mexico. It's just a little bit warmer, but doing all right. How are you doing in New Hampshire? That's how you call it, right?
I call it New Hampshire because the hamster in my brain is always pedaling along its wheel. And I don't know, this is where freedom happens. New Hampshire is great today. There was a Social Sunday event where, of course, it's Easter here in the States. I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but today people were out celebrating, so some activists got together and had a small dinner together, and while we did that, we saw a man get pulled over by the police, and that police officer just chose the wrong time and place to pull someone over, because he didn't expect to be swarmed by, like, 10 people with video cameras live-streaming him and, you know, reporting on what was going on. So he ended up leaving that guy with a warning and let him go on his way. And I like to think that the activists with video cameras had something to do with it. So I had a good day.
That's great for an activist. One of those days, you know, you get to help to hold those people accountable, and they probably will think again if there's a bunch of activists around.
I like that it has immediate results. Like, activism, like handing out literature is nice, but I prefer things that have results you can see right away. Like, a person who would have probably gotten a ticket if he were left alone and didn't have the support of friends and neighbors around his community, and instead he goes off with just a warning, no ticket. That's heartwarming to me. I want to see that happen more often.
Yeah, that's kind of the work we fiends do. I'm a long-time listener, a third-time fiend. So it's about getting liberty in the here and now. That's the way I see it, you know. Not through voting or through academic solutions, but through doing whatever we can. You do there in New Hampshire.
That's right. So this is
some of the.
Well, this is your third time on The Fiends, and I'm curious about introducing a little bit of what you do, what your background is, and what some of the things that you talked about last time you were on.
Yeah, we can say it. And of course, people probably, if they didn't listen last time, if they didn't, they didn't listen to the show. So my name is Hugo, and I'm a longtime libertarian, probably going on 10 years. So that's a long time for Latin America, at least. And I'm a computer guy. I'm a computer engineer, but I've been doing liberty activism in the form of podcasting and media, conferences, such things for about 4 years now. And I have a podcast, which is a call-in show in Mexico. It's called Radio Barra Libre. That's how I say it for speaking world. And it translates as open bar radio, because you can call in and talk about whatever you want, and we'll give it a liberty spin. Much like the other liberty show, straight out, no government show, the Free Talk Live, which you were a host of sometime, right?
Yes, yeah, I still host Free Talk Live. In fact, I'll be hosting tomorrow on GCN. So, yeah, that's another terrific radio program, which really takes all issues from a pro-liberty standpoint. A little bit different from this show in that they take calls and do news. You also take calls, correct?
Yes, I do. Usually it's not, seeing that it's an internet show, it's not always, you know, man on the street calling up the show and coming up with something, but it's a lot of liberty people here in Mexico or in Latin America call, and we talk about issues. You know, last time we were doing something about with the Holy Week, and it being that Mexico is mostly Catholic, so there's this this been a week off for, you know, schools, colleges, and so. And for working people, it's a couple days, coupled with Easter. So we're talking about that. We bring up those issues and try to make more liberty people out of listeners who might chance upon the webpage or get introduced by somebody else.
You sound like a young guy. Are you young?
Well, youngish. I'm 38, so. I could still count myself as young.
Do you?
But yeah, I'm going there. Well, yeah, I'm going into middle age happily, and that's gonna be a couple of years from now. So, yeah, I try to stay young.
Are you wearing a ring?
How old are you, Derek?
My question first. Are you wearing a ring?
Go ahead. A ring, a wedding ring. Are you talking about that?
Yes.
No, I'm not. I was married, but I'm no longer married. So, yeah.
I am not wearing a ring, and I am 25.
You're 25.
Yeah. I would like to get married someday, but it just hasn't
happened
yet.
Can you do that in the U.S.?
Can I get married in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I can get gay married pretty much anywhere, I think. And I probably wouldn't use the state if I had to get a marriage. I don't think that I would sign up for a marriage license, as they're called.
Yeah, I see your point. There's I was married by the state, and then I got divorced by the state. But now that I've been thinking of it, it's there's ways to go about whatever you want to accomplish by getting married through some other means. You know, you can set up legal arrangements without having to apply for permission. And also, well, if you're a person of faith, if you believe in a religion, you can, you know, also go about that without having to ask for permission from your masters.
Yeah. Well, I'm tempted to get one of the state permission slips to get married because like being able to see your lover in a hospital and such and sharing healthcare. But I feel like the temptation is a poisonous one. Like any relationship with the state is not a good deal in the end. If you can live your life independent of the state, that would be my goal. That's what I would aim for. Like I don't want a marriage to involve governments or government agents. You know, it just seems like once they get their foot in the door, there's going to be a lot more of them in my life.
That's true, and those contracts always come with strings attached, and sometimes you don't realize until much later. So it's better to, you know, just don't knock on my door. try to, you know, go along and try not to stop next to my house, and we'll be getting along just fine. That's what I say to the state, too, whenever I can.
Did you have any kids?
Any? Here in Mexico, it's not. Fortunately for the marriage thing, I didn't. So because it gets a lot more complicated when there's children. So I'm talking about legal stuff. So no, I didn't have any children, and thus I was able to easily get a divorce. But you know, if you have children, the state will claim some kind of control over them, you know, for their own good, that they'll say. And fortunately, I didn't go there, and I've been unmolested ever since.
Is there a culture except for when you're traveling?
Except for taxes and for taxes and traveling and all the same.
So in the U.S., there's something of a culture of divorce. Like my parents are divorced, and pretty much everyone in my extended family has been divorced at least once. So is there a culture of divorce similar to the U.S. and Mexico?
I think probably a little bit less, but there was a generation, you know, I come from divorced parents too, and remarried and sometimes re-divorced. So there was a time when people were realizing all over the world, and especially here, and I live in a very Catholic place, and I come from another Catholic place. I didn't tell you this before, but I wasn't born in Mexico. I was born in Venezuela, the Socialist Republic of Venezuela. Yeah.
Oh, man, how much time did you spend there?
Well, 17 years. First 17 years of my life.
Oh, wow.
But I got out in time.
So you really do know how bad socialism can be.
Yeah, I can tell you all about it.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Freedom Fiends reconvenes. Hugo and Derek J. giving it to you live. Meeting each other. Meeting ourselves. Meeting you here on the radio. And we are live this early morning. And Hugo, you are in Mexico. Where are you in Mexico? Oh, no. You might be so far away that I've completely lost you, but that's okay. We are connected over a terrific program that is free called Fiend Phone, and anyone can download this program and try it out for themselves. Anyone, that is, except for government people, because Fiend Phone, F-E-E-N, phone.com, is no gov software. It is protected by the BIPCOT no gov license, meaning that only people who are not government agents may use it. Those who work for government do not have permission. And one of the things that I want to get into with Hugo when he does return is about the topic of immigration, because he is in another location, one which many people say, oh, we don't want those Mexicans coming over to the U.S. and taking our jobs. Well, the funny thing is, people say that just about everywhere, and have said it for just about all of human history, about those strangers out there, beyond the distance, you know, beyond the imaginary lines that governments draw on maps. Well, in his case, it's the Salvadorians or the Ecuadorians. We don't want those people from the south coming up and invading our sweet Mexico. Isn't that right, Hugo?
Here.
Welcome back. And you have returned, hopefully not from Salvador, though.
No. It was just, you know, in Mexico, there's still a bit of monopoly businesses in the area of energy provision. So that was, it's somebody's fault. They're up there with the powers that be.
Yeah, I blame the government. You got droned.
I always do.
So I was just waxing poetic about immigration and how funny it is that no matter where you are, we all hate the immigrants. It's so weird. But that's the case in Mexico, right?
Yeah, it's the case in Mexico. You get a lot of yapping about, you know, how Mexicans are treated poorly when they go to the U.S. to immigrate, you know, illegally or legally, whatever. But the same thing happens here with people coming from Central America, sometimes en route to the U.S., sometimes to work and live here. And I myself, I am an immigrant to Mexico, so I know how that's like. And, well, yes, you know, and if you think about it, that just tells you that there's no, those reasons for hating immigrants, most of them are not real at all. It's just, you know, team spirit gone awry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like school spirit day. When people are like, rah, rah, we're from this school. And it's pretty much just a like a geographical accident, like an accident of their birth that they ended up at the school they're in. Typically, those school spirit things.
Yeah, usually.
They always struck me as weird because, yeah, it's the same thing as nationalism. Like, I was born on this part of the earth. Hooray! This is the best. I don't know why, just because I was born here. And like everyone cheers that chant. It seems. I mean, people say that in Mexico, surely, right?
Yeah, sure they do. And, well, you can, if you read the national anthem for Mexico, it's a bunch of the same nonsense that's on other countries. You know, we're the greatest, they are here to invade us, and let's defend with the blood our motherland, and such things, such nonsense. I call that nonsense. And, well, that's a bunch of accidents, as you say. If you're living on the right street, or you'll go to this school or that school district, it's the same thing. You were just born. Your mother, around the time you were born, was in this plot of land, and then you're something completely different than if you were born on the other side of that imaginary line. So people tend to forget that thing they teach you in school, where borders are imaginary lines. And they, after a while, it gets forgotten.
It's hilarious to me that Americans complain about Mexicans coming and stealing our jobs, because I have friends who are leaving the United States for Mexico for more freedom. So protect that freedom. We're coming for it, Hugo.
We are.
All right, we'll be right back after this trip to the free market. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm. newhampshire.fm.
Worms. Yeah. Freedom fiends. So, Hugo, my friends are trying to go to Acapulco for more freedom. Is that a freedom place?
Well, the whole Mexico, the whole country is free in many ways. Acapulco is as free as Mexico City, but with sun and nice beaches and cheaper housing. So yes, that's a good place to go.
Nice. Yeah, all of those things sound good.
Yeah, they sound good. If you're like the warm weather pretty much every day and you enjoy it, that's the best place for you. And yeah, we have a lot of freedoms. I miss some of those that you have up there in New Hampshire, like the freedom to carry a weapon. Freedom to carry a handgun.
Wait a minute. I thought you had that freedom in Mexico. I mean, sure, you're not allowed to do it, but people do it anyway, right?
People do it anyway, and there's bribes, and there's a lot of things you can go about, but it's not that dangerous either. So you can go... So you have to consider it carefully. People do carry, and there's very harsh penalties, but most of the time, people just, arrange it privately with the police. So that's a way out of bad laws. But yeah, there's some economic freedoms. Being next to the U.S., doing business is rather easy, too. We're not in a very socialistic place.
Yeah.
And the police are friendlier. You probably heard about people coming to Acapulco, and the police are very nice to them, seeing that they're seen as tourists, even though they may be here for 5 years. But, you know, they're Americans wearing shorts, going about the business.
Well, I hear rumors that people in Mexico pay off the police. This is unheard of in the U.S.,
I know. I've wondered for a long time why Mexicans and Americans break different laws. And yes, people pay off the police privately. It's not only the big honchos who do it. Let's say you get pulled over for some silly regulation or law or some minor infraction. Usually you can talk with the police. You might try to have them drop your ticket or drop the, let you go. But probably they will want a moderate amount of money. And that's not really serious. You know, nobody will get spooked by that. So the police will tell you, you got to help me out too if you want me to help you out. And then you'll about how much, and it's going to be usually less than $50, something like that.
So, but all day of collecting $50 from people, I mean, are these police living real fat off the hog?
Well, their salaries are not that high, so they supplement their income with getting money from people. It's pretty much the same, only the government is not involved. So I've been, I don't know, reluctant to say this, but sometimes that way is better, because you know that policeman will get, I don't know, money for his children or maybe booze money, something like that, and not use that money to further oppress myself, further oppress me as a so-called citizen. I don't like that either, that being said. But it's faster, and it could contribute less to your own oppression. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I like to keep everything local, including tyranny. Tyranny is a little easier to manage when it's nearby. You know, your friends and neighbors, people in your community, you may not be friends with your local police, but if you are in a town that's small enough that you see them at the grocery store or at the laundromat, they're less likely to treat you like an object and instead treat you like a fellow human being.
That's it's good we can arrange things locally with the police here, seeing this is a city with over 20 million people, so it's very unlikely that you'll encounter that police officer ever again. You know, at the store or anywhere else. So a very large city has its caveats, and that's one of them. You cannot really get to know people, you know, the police or people outside of your immediate circle of friends and coworkers.
Huh, that's interesting. So I guess my hypothesis was incorrect because I wasn't predicting that this was in an environment with 20 million people. You know, I was picturing a small town, but you're right. The tyranny does sort of still stay local, even though the population is rather large. That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder what it is then about the culture that keeps the tyranny localized the way it is. It's sort of decentralized, right?
I've thought about that, and yes, it's a matter of choosing. You know, nobody can obey all laws, and that's just a reality of there being so many laws, either in the U.S. or in other countries. So people choose to what to obey. For example, I'd say people here in Mexico, people, you know, just go through red lights sometimes. They apply criterion to that, and they go through the red light, and most of the times that won't cause a problem. And people in the U.S. Will sometimes have a prohibited substance in their pockets, which happens less here in Mexico. So it's just a matter of what you elect to disobey.
Really?
Because we all have to disobey.
Wow.
Yes.
That's surprising.
Yes, yes.
I would think it would be, you know, I would think that there would be people disobeying the unseen crimes, like possession, having vegetation in your pocket, or a firearm that might be prohibited. I would imagine it would be easier for a person to get away with something like that, so they'd be more likely to do it.
There's the whole narco thing here in Mexico. People are very scared of, well, mostly, you know, I would say older people or people who are more into the conservative extraction of ideas are very scared of the drug dealing here. And it's been violent. So things like drugs and firearms, people are more scared of here than some other, you know, people. There's a lot of people who avoid taxes and to run small businesses, very, very small sometimes, or business off their homes. And that's a very important freedom too. You know, people here start up restaurants, and sometimes the police will come and harass them a bit. They want to get some money, but you won't have to jump through all the hoops that the government puts you in the way. So that's an important freedom. I don't know. I understand there's for some months now, there's been a thrift shop that opened there in Keene, right?
Yes.
And you have run into some kind of problem and trouble.
Yes.
Yeah. And well, if you opened up a thrift shop here, well, you know, the problem with the signs, that wouldn't exist here. Just open your thrift store and start operating.
Yeah, that would be nice to not have all the intrusions from Big Brother government always standing over my shoulder and saying, oh, you need a permit to put up a sign for your business. You know, it is so frustrating, the lack of freedom in a place that has a motto, live free or die. But, you know, for business owners everywhere, there are difficulties from government bureaucrats. And I suppose Mexico must have some bureaucrats walking around with clipboards saying, your curtains aren't long enough, or your sinks aren't separated into enough parts. Do they have anyone like that? Well, I don't know if they do in Mexico or not, but I think it's interesting to see, and I think we may have lost Hugo to the drones. Either the Mexican government or the American government is trying to prevent this union, this trans-American union, from happening over the radio this evening. But, you know, Hugo is an immigrant himself, having immigrated from Venezuela to Mexico. I am an immigrant as well, in a way, having immigrated from Philadelphia to New Hampshire, where I now reside because of a freedom movement. And what I really wanted to know from Hugo is what he thinks is the most freedom place. I don't know, the freest place in the world. I think people for all of human history have been looking for that place. The pilgrims and, you know, before them, the explorers, and presumably before them, there were cavemen looking for freedom. Freedom from a bigger, stronger oppressors who would use force to coerce them, to take their property. And it's the same things that happen today, just with more badges and titles and paperwork, so it looks official. But people like me and Hugo, and possibly you listening, are seeking a place of more freedom. And hey, Hugo, so I want to know what you believe. You know, I moved to New Hampshire for more freedom, and you talked about our thrift store. That's one thing that a few freedom lovers have started up here. But even here in New Hampshire, we've run into obstacles opposing our attempt to serve the community. So what do you think is the freest place in the world? Do you have any thoughts on that? Oh, it's so frustrating that I somehow cannot get a hold of Hugo. You know, I would also be curious to know, given our difficulties tonight, whether or not the internet service providers are government-sponsored in Mexico. I know for a fact that in the U.S., there's something of a, I don't know what exactly to call it, except for fascist, a partnership between private companies and governments, where, you know, the government here in Keene, where I'm broadcasting, you know, they were approached by Verizon and other internet service providers saying, hey, we would like to run lines. We would like to put towers up here, but they're not able to do it because they don't have the permission from the city governments. Hey, Hugo, welcome back.
Yes, pretty much.
I'm going to give you some time back on air to regain your
signal
strength. Welcome back.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. It was coming through a little bit choppy when you just jumped in.
Okay.
But we're going to a break. We'll get that sorted out on the trip to the free market. Let's go sell some things. That's how the world runs, right? Because if goods don't cross borders, soldiers do.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Naked.
Oh, that's sexy. Hey, welcome, Michael. How are you this fine evening?
Naked.
And
I got out of the shower, and I wasn't going to be on radio. I'm taking the week off because I can barely speak from illnesses and asthma and allergies and other things that will be revealed later. But I heard the third world internet's failing on Hugo, so I decided to jump in while we try to get him in.
I was wondering
through the back
that.
Door.
Do you think it's the third world internet, or do you think it's the government? Like, is it government internet over there in Mexico?
Does he go there?
I don't know. Yes, you know, yes, he is.
It's a border checkup.
Yeah, here. Yeah.
So I guess there's a checkpoint for IP back.
Yeah, it sounds horrible, man. Hang up on
there.
Hang up and try the other method. I'll talk with. Hang up. Let's just kick him. Can we kick him? No.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
I just did.
Hang up and try the other method. All right, Hugo. That we discussed using the carrier pigeon. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So what's up, Derek?
You know, I'm just loving life. Everything is going really well here in Keene, New Hampshire. I feel like freedom is increasing for me in a really like personal way. I've gotten a freedom job. I work with Freedom Friends. We've got this thrift store that Hugo was mentioning, and it's really taken off. And like, it's part of a dream come true that would never really would have happened if I hadn't taken the leap of faith, the risk of moving someplace, changing my whole life, and just trying something new, like starting a business with a couple of friends. And it's really rad. It's so cool that it's working out.
Are you naked?
I should be. Actually, I always put on more clothes than I ever wear for Freedom Fiends because it's so cold. And
what are you trying to like? Are you trying to gird your loins against the fiends?
Yes, I'm trying to become as sterile as possible so that the fiends never reproduces. No, I do. I stick a fan.
No, when fiends reproduce, they leave. Nima left. He's on his second kid now.
Yeah, I can't have that happen again. So
yeah.
I don't know. I do. I stick a fan, a heater fan, right by my feet, even though it's April. Did you know it snowed today in Keene?
Wow.
How sad is that?
I mean, that's like Wyoming stuff.
I think everybody cried. I looked around and everyone was just tearing up. No, don't let it be. We just got through. And it was Easter, so people were happy and celebrating, and that was pretty sweet. But, you know, what else was cool? I was telling Hugo earlier that some of the activists celebrate every Sunday. We do a social event, and the police decided to pull someone over, like, right next to our social event. So what they weren't expecting was, like, 12 activists pouring out with live stream video cameras and surrounding them. And they were like, okay,
nice.
All right, everyone have a nice day. We'll see you later. Let this guy go. And I think that was a real victory. So that's the kind of freedom that I see like increasing that I didn't see in Philadelphia. And it gives me a lot of hope. It makes me happy.
Nice. You know what you and I have in common?
What's that?
Everybody in our family except us has been divorced.
Yeah. That kind of makes me sad, though. Does that make you sad?
Yeah. I don't know, because I'm kind of like... I kind of soft defooed them a long time ago. I mean, I still talk to them, but like barely. They just think I'm too weird to talk to. They defooed me. They kind of like ran away from me. I like it. I drove them away.
With your coolness? You were too cool. They had
basically.
It repelled them like an opposite magnet.
Yeah, I just talk about Austrian economics to them and they just run.
Yeah. Well, what about, did you ever talk about
their... repel statists.
Did you ever talk about their divorces or anything? Like, hey, what happened with Uncle Sally? Or Uncle... I guess that's not a good name.
That's your family, man.
Yeah, what did happen to Uncle Sally?
Well, Sally can be a guy's name. Sally can be a... It's a mobster name.
Yeah.
Salvatore.
That's another great thing that's happening in Keene is regular karaoke nights with...
The Mafia?
No, I was singing Boy Named Sue last night. And
Goy Named Jew, yeah.
What?
I had a Jewish friend who used to change the words to a Goy Named Jew.
That's pretty good.
All right. Yeah, he was one of those self-hating Jews.
Well, back to California or Nevada or Mexico or wherever with you. Pod Bay Too Gay. I'm banishing you to Pod Bay Too Gay. And don't come back.
Worms. Yeah, stick on here for a sec.
Yeah.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow. Meow. Word. worms.
Worms.
Are you there, Tommy?
Worms, worms.
Yay.
Worms, 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 worms.
And Dobby and Michael and Hugo. Yeah, we're back on the Freedom Fiends, and we got them all. Okay. We got everybody here tonight. Big round of applause.
I'm passing the torch. Oh. I'm passing the torch to Dobby. I'm going to go soak my voice in some in a Tricky Dicky special. That's, let's see, two parts purple Kool-Aid, one part formaldehyde from the jar with Nixon's brain we got in the back storeroom.
Yummy.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Central Scrutinizer. Yep. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
I find it hard to believe Richard Nixon wasn't occasionally on some cocaine or whatever the upper of the day was.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he... I thought Mother's Little Helper was the popular thing around that time.
I don't know.
It's hard to imagine...
How's it going, Derek?
Richard Nixon on drugs other than bourbon. It's going great. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. So I was just telling Michael Dean about how much freedom there is in New Hampshire, and I love it. And he got me all hot and bothered here. Of course, I'm sitting next to a heater, but he told me he's naked. Are you naked, too? Is this the naked show?
No, I'm not, no. Sorry, I missed the memo. I wasn't even in my office when I got this call. We just got back. We went and saw Furious 7, which is Fast and Furious 7.
Oh, my God. Which is on 7 now?
Yeah.
Wow.
So there you go. It's a nice like sucker punch to the adrenal glands. It's pretty cool.
Explosions. But,
yeah, it's essentially fast cars, and in this case, it's like flying cars hopping from tower to tower. And
I just can't. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not making fun of you, but when I was a kid, like I would play cars. I would play like with trucks, and I would like roll them across the ground and then blow them up, like. You know, bang, and then you know they would crash into stuff. And this just, when I see movies like that, it just reminds me of the grown-up version of like, hey, and then we should make the tanker crash into the, you know, the really fast car. And it's like it's the same things, explosions. It'll be awesome.
So I'm not a Fast and Furious fan. I haven't seen the other movies. This is the first one that I've seen. But I read something that really made me appreciate the genre, and that is, I think this was either from The Rock or one of the other like muscle-bound actors in the film. He wrote a commentary saying that it was essentially Dungeons and Dragons with cars instead of horses. And that the movie is sort of designed to be that sort of extreme leveling of human capabilities. And so when I watch it, I just say, oh, that's a horse and he's wearing armor and they're fighting a dragon. And then it all makes sense to me. So that's what I do when I watch this movie.
My real question for your movie going experience was, how much was the popcorn?
We didn't buy popcorn.
Oh, come on. You're no fun. Did you buy anything at the movie theater?
We got a soda. There was they have these new machines now where like it's like a weird like ATM soda vending machine, and you get to pick exactly what flavor you want to put in it, and you sort of like mix and match this thing into a custom, I don't know. Have you seen these things? You know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea. What do you mix and match?
It's like a touch screen, right? So yeah, it's like a touch screen, and you go up to the touch screen, and like the first menu is like flavors, and it's like we can put cherry in it, or we can put orange in it, or we can put raspberry in it, or we can put lime in it.
I'm already like, just give me my soda, please. I don't need all of these options. Make it good. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a novelty that is nice once, and then it's like, you know, you have your recipe, you know what you want, and that's all you really need it to be. It's probably a device that was meant to replace bartenders, and then, you know, California law or whatever sort of law was governing this thing said, no, you can't serve alcohol out of this thing. And they're like, well, then what are we going to do with this excellent patent? And then they made sodas with it.
Orange drink. We will produce the knockoff Sunny D for the world. Well, that's terrific. I'm glad that they have that at the movie theater now. I'm always astounded at the prices of things at the theater. My grandparents tell me when.
Oh yeah, it was a $5 small soda.
Holy moly, $5 for a small soda? And I'm sure.
Well, the small soda is like the large from when I was a kid, so.
Yeah, I follow.
Well, that's the other the cool thing about the vending machine is that you get to pour your own soda, and so you can put as much ice or not ice as you want in it.
So I was thinking about
free
this
refills and all that
the other day. First of all, my grandparents say that when they went to the movies, it was a nickel, And sometimes you would get a double feature. So it was two movies for a nickel. And on top of that, the seats and everything, they gave away prizes, like sometimes in between or after the movies. And it would be like silverware and dish sets and stuff, like nice prizes that you could win. And you basically put no money down for this experience. I'm sure they pool it all, so the movie theaters profited. But still, I feel like you got a lot more for your nickel back then. Right now?
Well, it was a silver nickel.
Yeah, well, I guess so, but still.
What's a silver nickel now?
Like, probably a couple like $3. Of bucks. Yeah, nothing. So, and I don't even think there ever was a silver nickel. They're nickel. They were always
there's
nickel.
A silver nickel.
No.
I think they were silver.
No way, man.
You think they were made of nickel? That would stand to reason.
Right. Anyway, the thing about movies is they keep coming out in theaters, and it's like, okay, but it gets faster and faster to DVD. I was walking past them in the store today, and I was seeing like boxes of DVDs that were brand new for $5. And I remember DVDs being like $20 or $10 or something. Now the price is coming down so much. The movies are coming out so fast. They're going right to Netflix, and they're skipping everything. When's it going to be that movies come straight to Oculus, and you're just watching virtual reality movies where you're just immersed in the actual environment of the movie? Yourself.
See, I think we got to bypass more than that. I think we need to get past the actors and the script and the plot and all of that and just have the Oculus plugged into your adrenal gland so that you can push a button and be like, whoo, what a rush.
You don't even need a plot, right? Just the drug. Just administer adrenaline to me. That's what I want, theater. It should come in the Coke, the popcorn. You want some extra adrenaline with your butter?
Yeah, you know, that would be really phenomenal because, like, then you're watching the movie while on adrenaline. I bet it would add to the experience of the whole thing.
Yeah, but then the government of California and New York would have to get all over banning it and stuff. People would have to leave Hollywood. I do wonder,
ban
though,
adrenaline.
I wonder about if you're watching a movie with someone on an Oculus screen. Like, it's, you can't really talk. I like to talk with my friends during movies, like, oh, what did he just do? Or why did he go into that building? And
yeah, I'm one of those guys too. I like to call it. I like to spoil the ending before we've seen it. That's what I like to do in movies.
Yeah, they should be participatory.
And I did it in this one. I did it in this one too, because in one of the first scenes, one of the race car drivers is like raising a son, and the son is rooming with his toy car, and then the toy car flies off the whatever, and he says, "Oh no, son, cars don't fly." And I'm like, "All right, great. So we're going to see flying cars." And sure enough, before the end of the movie, there were a number of flying car scenes. So
wow. Wow. You're so wise.
I'm pretty good at spoiling movies.
Did you shout it out to the whole theater? Like,
no, I just whispered it to my wife. You know, okay. I'm a talker in movies. It's like there's two species on this planet. There are people that want like total silence, and there's people that I want to do the chit chat. What is that show? Plan 9 from Outer Space or Mystery Science Theater 2000?
3000, yeah.
3000, 5000. I'm that guy. I'm the one who like I not only want to spoil the movie, I want to make fun of the movie while it's happening. I want to point out the continuity errors while they're happening. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, totally. No, but it occurred to me while I was thinking about, you know, where is the future of entertainment and movies going? And I do think it's going to this, like, right in front of your face style screen, because the screens can only get so big and so clear, and before we need to just put them right in front of our eyeballs. And so this Oculus thing exists for video games, and it's just a goggles.
We're just measuring it wrong.
What?
We're measuring it wrong. So like a screen is, we measure a screen and all graphics really in DPI or dots per inch, right? Yeah. And so we really need to start measuring, because it doesn't matter what the size of the screen is. The question is how many pixels per rod and cone is it? Like it should be a resolution with reference to my eyeball, right? So if it's a small screen with 900 DPI, then I don't care if it's the same ratio to rods and cones as a large screen with 72 DPI. Like, to me, the important ratio is not dots to inch, it's dots to my eyeball.
Worms. Does that make sense? Yes, it does. But my issue here is when we get to that point where we're watching movies in front of our eyeballs, how do you turn to the person next to you and start talking about the scene that you're seeing unless they're happening at exactly the same time, or unless you could pause the other person's movie? Like, you're all sitting together, I don't know, you've got your friends, you're all watching some scary movie together, but you've all got your goggles on. How are you going to pause for everybody? I mean, is that going
to
be
you're gonna have to have you're going to have a latency program. Essentially, what it's going to have to be is you're not going to be able to whisper directly into their ear. You're going to tell your Oculus to say something to your friends at this part of the movie you're watching. And then whenever they see it, whatever the latency is, they'll get a little blink pop-up message that says, hey, so-and-so said this during this part of the movie. And so that comment could potentially be for everyone who ever watches the movie ever again if they subscribe to your commentary.
Wow. My mind is completely blown. You more than answered my question. I can't wait for this to exist. And I hope that it happens in the way that you've described. If it's anything less, I'm going to be disappointed now, because your imagination.
Because then you know what? The other species that wants it quiet, they can turn off the chat, and then I can talk all I want.
Yeah. We don't need that species. The species of non-participation. Passive, I don't know what to call it. Just consumption.
Yeah.
I don't need that. Anyway, that's most of the people in the movie theater. And that's why I don't go to the theater anymore. First of all, the expensive popcorn that, you know, is never...
The expensive ticket, man. It's a $20 ticket.
Whoa. Yeah, tickets are more expensive than I remember. So, what was it? A 3D movie? IMAX or something?
No, maybe I'm thinking of the 3D ticket price. It might have been a $12 ticket. Or,
yeah, 12 seems more exactly, reasonable.
But it's definitely more than...
Yeah.
We have a cat invading the office. Hang
oh,
on
no.
A second.
Okay. Yeah. We'll the Fast and Furious cat.
Yeah, well, we've been out all day, so he wants some attention, but I jumped right on the phone. So he's going to run around the house and make noise for a while.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Well, this is the right show for it. If he can meow, he can participate in meow therapy. So you saw Fast and Furious. I don't know what the last movie I mm-hmm. saw was. But
I don't know either.
I know the next movie I want to see is that it's not Einstein. It's Stephen Hawking. It's a Stephen Hawking romance movie. How cute is that?
Oh, that's cool.
It's for super nerds, to be sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all need romance. Even us super nerds. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
On my mind, my wife and I were talking about, I don't know if it's appropriate for the show, but it's when is it either wise or obligatory to confront racist things people say around you? What do you think of that?
Wait,
well, that's
I want to start with that when we come back. Can we?
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm asking.
All right, great. 5 seconds. I don't hear the feed. Worms, we are live. Welcome. This is Freedom Fiends. And what is the question, Davi?
So this is just, I don't want to out anybody or anything. It's a minor incident, but it raises a philosophical question. And it's when people around you who are, let's say, you know, family or people who you can't exactly just sort of like ostracize for no reason or for like slight reasons, when they say things that are sort of, let's say, racist, what sort of obligation or when do you think that it's wise to confront them? And how do you think is the best way to do that?
Well, when it personally bothers you, and stay calm and be polite. So, like, this happens on occasion. This happened recently.
We can say bigoted. It doesn't have to be just about race.
Yeah. It could be, like, a homophobic comment. It could be about race or something. But I always say, like, you know, I make it personal. Like, hey, that bothers me. I have this person in my life who's like this. And, you know, I don't appreciate that. And then usually that's enough for people to say, like, If they push it and they're like, oh, I want to continue being bigoted around you, then they're not a good friend or person to be around. And if they change their behavior to be more friendly and like open and welcoming, then that's
great. So this wasn't, this was sort of like benevolent bigotry. This was like, I'm going to assume that this class of people is underprivileged, and I'm going to think that it's so great that this other class of people can benefit them, and I hope they take full advantage. And you don't really know anything about them at all, except for the color of their skin. So it's not quite like offensive. I mean, it is offensive, but it's not quite like insulting. It's like you're well-wishing, but in a real collectivist bigoted way. Does that make sense?
No. Where is this? Is this happening to you? Can you make this more real for me? It's too nebulous.
Yeah. Okay. I can just give you the example. So we were watching basketball, and a relative of mine said, you know, it's interesting that these teams are all black now.
What?
You know, and I just really hope that they take those scholarships and they use them to get out of poverty.
Whoa. Oh my God.
It's benevolent, right? Like they're wishing the best for somebody. It's not like they're calling them. It's not like they're saying they're, I don't know. It's not like the insult is there, but it's like my wife and I look at each other. We're like, did we really just hear that? Like, did that just fall into this room?
Wow.
And I didn't know how to respond, and we didn't respond. And it just sort of hung in the air for a while. This has to happen to people. What's that?
I wouldn't feel bad for not responding. That it sounds to me like a really ignorant comment rather than
right. It's not hate filled, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's just ignorant and bigoted.
Sometimes silence is the right answer, though, Davi. Like I have an old wise woman in my life who seemingly doesn't hear things when she doesn't like them. You know, she'll just plain ignore certain things. You know, you'll say, oh, nice day today. And she's, yes, it is. Oh, the grass is so green. The butterflies, it's lovely. And then you say, like, oh, you know, that Obama, I sure do hate that healthcare thing he's ramming down. And she'll just be silent. Just say nothing. Just, like, not respond. And I think that is wise because there's...
Oh, that topic's just not available, right?
Yeah, there's just such limited time in life. You know, life's so short. We should only fill it with wonderful, positive things, if we can, and pay no mind to those things that are just nasty. And you know, like, what would you really be doing to make this person's life or your life or your wife's life better by causing some conflict with this well-meaning guy?
I don't know.
Just leave it alone.
I mean, that's the thing, too. Like, when it's family, there's also sort of the natural revolving door of life and death that occurs. I sometimes wonder if it's like anti-pragmatic to confront people at a particular age, but
yeah,
I don't know. So you think just leave it alone?
You know, it's the best possible scenario is that you could probably convince this person that, you know, thinking like that isn't really accurate or sensitive,
But the question is, do you think that by engaging them, that's going to happen? And I would say it's very unlikely.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might. This person has expressed a great interest and appreciation for my way of thinking in the past. Huh. But it is sort of like you're saying, Derek, when it's something that she doesn't agree with, it's like she didn't hear it. Like she doesn't hear it when she asks me who I'm going to vote for president and I say nobody. That doesn't land for her. But she'll ask me what I think about particular issues and that'll be interesting for her. So that's how it goes, I guess.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
It's a yappy cat.
Worms. Hey, Davi. Hey, Hugo.
Hey. How's it going?
Hey.
We're all across the world, and we're talking about immigration, because I think immigration is great. Hugo, wait, are all of us immigrants? Davi, have you moved from Saudi Arabia?
Well, I lived there for a while. I was never actually a citizen of there. I was born, you know, two doors down from where I am now, so I haven't moved very far, but I have traveled a lot in my life.
Okay, well, Hugo was telling us he moved from Venezuela to Mexico. I moved from Philadelphia to New Hampshire, which to me is sort of like another country. And you, Davi, lived in Saudi Arabia and now live in California, but you don't look different from the people around you. And neither do you, Hugo. Neither do I. So none of us look different. Do we get persecuted at all for being foreigners in our homelands?
No. Not really.
Well,
not for my appearance.
Really. In other ways?
A little bit of trouble from the accent.
Hmm.
Oh, okay.
I guess it is. It does happen sometimes that people don't care about my opinion because I'm white and male.
Really? You get the reverse discrimination of...
yeah, this is California.
Wow. So, like, what's, you know, you'll just say, well...
Like, I'll express my opinion about some particular thing and it'll be like, well, of course that's your opinion because you're male and you don't understand the other perspective. You can't understand the other perspective. It's not possible for you.
So what is that like? What is that argument? Is that like the original sin argument of like you're born with original sin and you just can't rid
no,
it?
No, I actually it's not original sin. These people do believe in original sin, but that usually feeds into environmentalism. What this is if you've never been in the military, you can't criticize the war. That's the argument that and they're just applying it to gender or race or whatever their war is.
Oh.
So that's this belief brilliant. That there cannot be reverse racism, there cannot be reverse sexism, because the other side is not in a position of power. That's something.
That's not just a belief. That's what academics teach.
Yeah, I was reading.
That's the canon
from a book. Yeah, from a book. The Common Core book.
Yeah.
One of those, where it was I was talking precisely about that. So it's collectivism in the extreme. You know, you cannot possibly be harmed by this because you're in the winning team, so to speak.
Right.
You know, I'm male and white-ish. So
I'm not even playing for the team. I'm actually playing against the team. But, you know, whatever. You know.
What game are we playing? I don't even know.
So this happened to me. This was at Occupy, right? So the Occupy movement, at least in Oakland, and I'm sure most places, was mostly liberal. And in Oakland, it was largely Marxists. And there was a discussion about marginalized voices. And I said, hey, you know, I'm here as a libertarian. Like, I feel totally marginalized. And you had people who were ethnically diverse, but all Marxists, saying that I was already represented because there were already white Marxists on the panel.
Like, so they were really only seeing you for your color?
Right. And so, like, there was no other libertarian on the panel. Everyone on the panel was Marxist. So there was no diversity of opinion. But there was at least diversity of melanin, which I guess is as important. So,
well, it's easier that way because at least you can know if you did it right. Like, you know, lining up crayons all in the crayon box and making sure they're all there is a lot easier than asking the crayons each of their various different opinions and sorting them that way. So, you know, I guess these people, you can't blame them because they're just a product of their environment, right? They just grew up in the California socialist environment. I don't know where that mentality
so
comes
did I.
From. Oh, right. Well, then what makes you different?
You know, that's canon. That's canon Marxist theory, though. Marxists believe that it's your class, the class you're born into, that determines the way you think. So they're not even, you know, going against their own prejudice in other respects.
So you're saying that's not true?
No, I'm saying that's their core belief with respect to class theory and the whole thing. That's what they learned in school, and so they went to school to relearn or to confirm their belief that you cannot just think for yourself. You think the way you were raised to think, which is completely false since, you know, I was born in Venezuela and then I moved to Mexico and it's unlikely that I'd become a libertarian or a liberty person or, an ANCAP. And I did. So that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I have a confession. Well, you know, what's that, Davi?
I was raised to believe that I was Scottish until I was in my 20s, and then I discovered I was actually British and not a drop of Scot in me. So, like, as far as, like, what you're born to think, I don't know what that means. So,
Who would lie to you about such a thing? What's the point?
We were misinformed. Our whole family was.
Oh, okay. It was just a mistake. That sounds like the worst malicious lie to tell someone, you're not really Scottish. Oh, no.
Well, no. What it is I've
already bought
before,
the bagpipes.
But what it is our family has a tartan, and it's a Scottish tartan.
Okay.
But we discovered
is that like a
that
shield
it's not
or a crest?
It's like a crest, yeah. The patterns and colors represent things about the clan.
Okay.
But what we discovered was that we're not genetically from that Scottish clan. We were given the right to wear that clan's tartan because we defended them from a British invasion.
Oh.
And so we were British, but we were awarded at some point the right to wear this color. And so we just always thought we were part of it, and we're not.
Did you feel cheated of your heritage?
No, I love it because it solidifies for me the inconsequentialness of genetics.
Yeah.
When it comes to what you think. So, like, for me, it is a great anti-racist testament in my biology and history. So,
yeah, to me, it's so funny. Like, we're growing up. I'm growing up in a time where the world is really coming in close on itself. You know, like, here we are connected across the world, talking and producing a radio show. So, like, the world has gotten really small. And they're sending rockets up so that you can get from L.A. to Paris in 1 hour. And in all of this, it's amazing to me that people keep their accents and keep speaking different languages, and that we don't all just meld into one language or one culture. Like, to hear a person from Dublin speak and still have that accent that they probably had like 100 years ago or their great-grandfather had is, I don't know, I just think that's incredible. Like, how does that continue to happen?
Well, it's got to be organic, right? So I've been using this mantra. I heard this recently: imposed order equals escalation of disorder. So there have been attempts throughout history to impose a universal language like Esperanto or something, right. And it has never worked,
Esperanto.
Right? Well, okay, you do, but you know what?
All three of us
speak English. But the point is that it's not an organic movement, and language is an organic movement. But there are areas where language is sort of universalized. Like, the word computer is the same in most languages because it's an invention and a word that was created after these languages were already communicating
with one another. Oh, yeah. Okay. I see.
So it's just a matter of time. Like, I bet everyone on the planet knows what LOL means.
Right. Weird. So I wonder if there will be a time when we don't really have accents, or they're just a thing of the past that we just replicate. Like, oh, ho, ho, New York accent. Ha, ha, ha. You know, how quaint.
There'll be a difference, but not in terms of where you are located. You know, because there will be so much communication between places. Maybe you'll speak differently because of some group you're associated, the lingo, if you will, of your group.
Right.
So divisions will not be by cities or lands or countries, but rather by, you know, liberty people, or I don't know, people who do some craft, or, you know, whatever kind of group you want to.
Well, social class as well. I mean, like, what about in the book 1984, where the proles speak in like a Cockney type of dialect, and I forget if it was that book or not, but then there's like the important smart government people or something, and they all speak in proper English.
I don't recall that from 1984.
Maybe that was not the right book.
That kind of sounds like Brave New World.
Well, maybe that's
but
I'm
I don't
getting
recall
confused.
That from Brave New World either.
But, okay, well, I'm just making it up. So maybe
that's okay. You know, we can make it up. So it may make sense that there would be a distinction between class as far as dialect and a language is concerned. To some people speculate that that's what the Tower of Babel was about. It was that the labor class was the one building, and the ruling class was the one hanging out at the top of the tower with nothing to do, and so they developed different dialects and eventually different languages, and this is why the Tower of Babel is about people failing to communicate.
Well, like, here's one.
But the other thing is, ancient languages are going to be valuable and useful and meaningful, at least at an academic level, as long as we're interested in translating these ancient manuscripts, right? So, like, people are still interested in learning ancient Greek.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Or
Latin. Like, people don't really speak Latin anymore, but it's still, we didn't lose the language, we just stopped using it.
Right. I took 4 years of Latin because I am interested in translating some of these things. And I think it's weird, too, because, like, the translations have already been done. I just feel like reading them myself. You know what I mean? I want to read what this guy wrote 2,000 years ago. I think that's pretty cool. Like,
I took a few semesters of Arabic for the same reason, because I like to fact check translations from time to time as best as I can.
Well, it also gives me a new vision of what they're talking about to be able to read it in the original language. Like, Pliny the Younger wrote about the first ever recorded volcano eruption, and he's just describing it like, you know, if this big tree is growing from the mountain and it's totally black, and now it's covering up the whole sky and it's covering us in shade, and now the tree is falling down with ash, and you know, it was like weird because it was humans' first ever encounter with this type of experience of a volcano erupting.
Yeah, so it's describing something with words you've never had before.
Yeah, and it was cool to be able to read that like in the original Latin, because you can sort of, you can see that what he's describing is a tree, and like, I can see a volcano happening for this human just 2,000 years
ago. Yeah, that's why I never bought into the idea that people who didn't have words for boats couldn't see boats. Have you ever heard this theory?
Yeah, that's baloney. Because they could see mountains,
they just
right?
They thought they were something else. They would have thought they were wooden whales out there or something.
Didn't they think they were like moving mountains, like mountains moving in closer towards them?
Well, they saw them is the point.
Yeah.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow,
meow.
Meow.
Worms.
Meow, 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 meow.
Freedom.
Fiends.
Meow. Hey, fiends. Let's wrap it up. This is Redemption in the Third Act, which means we have to close this show and say goodbye. But before we do, let's recap some of the amazing things that we discussed. First of all, Hugo, you do a podcast. What is the name of it again?
It's called Radio Barra Libre. That's Spanish for open bar radio.
And is it in Spanish?
It is. It is, and you can listen to it. Well, I guess that can be in the show notes.
Okay, terrific. We'll include that. And yeah, that's going very well. Been going for about a year. And welcome to the Fiends. It's good to have you on.
And first international host, as far as I know.
No, because we've got Dan Green of Greening Out.
I think Hugo was on before Dan was.
Oh, you're right.
Wrong about that?
Yeah, no, I guess I was. Right. I guess I was before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, boom. I was the first
global show
of the U.S.
Well,
international. So
they're all imaginary lines anyway.
That's true. So how about intercontinental? That's a body of rock, right?
Yeah, but he's still on our
continent.
Well,
it's fine, yeah.
That's true. So Dan is our first intercontinental host.
Yeah. And we're all basically on the same piece of land. We're just on one big
floating thing. There's just water in the way. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's all one rock, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And there's not even that much water in the way in between us tonight here, me, Hugo, and Davi.
Yeah.
About rockets, I don't know. Like, you guys travel a lot. You have passports?
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess it's necessary if you're coming to the U.S. Do you come to the U.S. often, Hugo?
Yeah, but I don't know, once every one or two years. And actually, I got to have two passports, the Venezuelan one and the Mexican one.
Why do you have to have two?
Well, if I want to go to Venezuela, I have to come in as a Venezuelan. So got to have both, pay for the both, and, you know, pay homage to both governments.
Wow. That's like a Jedi mind trick of like, oh, will this passport work? No. How about this one? Okay. We'll take that. That'll do just
fine. These are the papers you're looking for.
Yeah. So, no matter where you are, there are going to be people who love freedom. And the important thing is that we communicate it with our language, right? Isn't that what we all decided, that language is the key?
Yeah, I imagine it would be pretty difficult to communicate without language.
Well, there's, I guess there's all different types. Like, there's, like, giving, like, charity is not language per se, but I feel like that is one way to share liberty and to share what I would consider like peace, like charity, helping people in need.
It might generate goodwill, but I don't think it communicates the concept.
Yeah, you're right. There's still something
deeper
there. You
gotta set an example and then talk about it. You know, so you can teach through example. The people can see how you're doing things, how you go about in your life peacefully, as you were saying. And then you can drop them a line or two or talk to them about it. And that'll rush things. You know, it's the ideas have been pre-digested. So you can talk to people about liberty and probably convince them.
Well, you've made it easier for me to talk about Liberty here tonight, Hugo. I value your perspective. I wish I could learn more about what's going on with the world of healthcare. I've got many more questions for you about what life is like in Mexico, but we're all searching for more freedom, and I guess it just means different things to different people, depending on what you want out of life, where you are in the world. Like you said, like people can have, they can break red light laws in Mexico, but they're not as likely to have illegal vegetation in their pockets. Whereas in the U.S., that might be the reverse.
Yeah, totally. And but I think people are looking for liberty and seeking liberty, every continent, and just a matter of some places are further ahead in that race. And I'm trying to do it here in Mexico. But I think everybody wants to have liberty. I don't know if they've heard of the ideas of liberty, but everybody's looking for it. Nobody wants to have a master in the things that they really enjoy of life, you know, close things, family, friends, people who really matter to them. People want to do those things freely, don't you think?
So I agree with you that it is innate. I can't think that there's a human being or a culture anywhere that doesn't want autonomy of their own actions, right? Do you think that having the word liberty or having a similar word in your language makes that easier to defend or easier to possess or easier to take?
Oh, absolutely.
I think so.
Yeah, having a word for something is like essential to achieving it in reality.
Good thing is there's two words for that in English.
What are they?
Well, freedom and liberty. We get both. Here in Spanish, we got only one.
There's only one word for liberty in Spanish?
Yeah, it's libertad. Just the one. The equivalent of liberty.
Yeah, it would seem to me...
You can go with that.
You should invent some more Spanish words for liberty, and maybe there will be more of it. More people can conceive of it.
That's a good idea. I'll get started with that.
I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight. We'll do this again tomorrow. It's going to be me and Davi. Freedom Fiends.